This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you are well.
Boker Tov. Well, when Corona hit and we were all forced to stay at home, we somehow became accustomed to this concept of remote medicine, doctors meeting us online and diagnosing and treating us without having to do a physical visit. Well, that whole concept was really taken to a whole new level last week when a lady called Shira appeared on TV to talk about her job as a snake catcher in the area of Kiryat Gat. That's what she does, and it was considered to be somewhat unusual. And she was being interviewed on TV. One of the viewers of her show was Professor Avi Chafetz, who he is the head of the head and neck surgery and oncology unit at a hospital, a very well-known hospital in the central part of Tel Aviv. And he was watching this show, and he noticed a certain swelling on her neck as she was talking to the presenter. And he decided that this swelling on her neck looked quite similar to cases that he treated where patients had had thyroid tumors. And he decided to get in touch with the production team at the television station and send an urgent message to Shira that she should go and have herself checked out because he was concerned that she might have a thyroid tumor. And so she, in turn, did exactly that. She's underwent some biopsies. We haven't understood exactly what the diagnosis has been, but I found that to be quite incredible.
That is unbelievable.
Watching the show, and wow, he just noticed this on her neck, and he decided that he needs to get in touch with her to let her know that it's something that needs to be checked out. He claims that it's not necessarily something that could be cancerous, and in fact, very frequently they're not. It was just worth having it looked at again. So I found that to be...
What an incredible story.
On the one hand, you know, very kind of hands-on diagnosis with remote medicine. And I suppose it also goes a little bit to this kind of slightly intervening nature that Israelis have.
I was just going to say, doesn't it talk to Israel, to so many aspects of it?
Yeah, they don't just like to leave things. If they notice something out there that has little or nothing to do with them, that they're very inclined to get involved. And of course, in this particular case, the professor felt that it did involve him because he felt that he could have something to offer. So I think that's a great story. And of course, you know, we're watching very closely again events in the Straits of Hormuz, Iran apparently having attacked ships again last night and this morning, some major damage done to ships. The issue is that Iran is very sensitive about all the flow of shipping through the Straits of Hormuz right now. The Straits of Hormuz at its narrowest point is around 30 kilometers wide, and the one coast is the Iranian coast. And on the other side of the straits is Oman, the Omani Peninsula. And the Omanis have said, if Iran doesn't want you to travel, to sail your ships on their side of the straits, then why don't you just sail your ships on our sides of the straits in order to allow ships in and out, especially to the Gulf countries, for the sake of moving crude oil around. And of course, the Iranians have said, under no circumstances will anybody be allowed to travel to ship themselves on the Omani side of the coast. The Americans are also involved. They have aircraft and they have naval vessels around to try and ensure free flow as much as possible of shipping through the Straits of Hormuz, all in the interests of trying to preserve a relatively normal oil price so that it doesn't spike again in the way that it did when the Straits of Hormuz were closed. But the Iranians are super sensitive about those ships that have decided to sail on the Omani side, and they tend to attack them as they did last night. The Omanis, of course, have no real military way of preventing these attacks or retaliating against them, and they're relying on the Americans to retaliate. But I find it astonishing that with all these threats, where Trump again yesterday stood up and said he could, you know, clear Iran out in an afternoon's work or something like that, and yet when this attack comes and a civilian ship is attacked by the Iranian IRGC, the Americans are a little reticent in their response to this. I would have thought that this could easily escalate into quite a major military exercise, and yet it's not the first time that it's happened, and we don't see much response from the American side. So we, of course, are watching today to see how all of this pans out. It might just be one of those 1 or 2 days where a few missiles are exchanged here and there. The Iranians might well fire again against some of the Gulf countries as they've done in the past. But I'm not sure that this is going to escalate into anything major.
Yeah. And so it continues. But the strange thing, or certainly one that I was surprised by, was that Hamas has taken the steps in Gaza to dissolve its ruling authority. So, Anthony, what does this actually mean in terms of the Gaza Strip?
Well, the so-called Board of Peace has been set up in order to take control over the Gaza Strip. And the Board of Peace is essentially an overseeing body under the Director Generalship of Nikolai Mladenov. He is the Director General of the Board of Peace. And they are sort of a supreme governing body, not a day-to-day governing body. The day-to-day work was supposed to have been taken over by the committee, the National Committee for the Administration of Gaza. And that is headed up by Ali Shaaf. And he effectively is supposed to be a technocrat who takes control over governing Gaza. Now, they have not yet, in spite of all the time that's gone by, they have not yet taken over governing and controlling and administering the Gaza Strip. Until now, that's continued in Hamas's hands. And what we understand is that behind the scenes, there have been some attempts to try to implement the ceasefire agreement that was brokered by the Americans, where one of the terms of that agreement is that Hamas will be disarmed. And therein lies the sticky point, where we understand that no matter what the Board of Peace and the National Committee for the Administration of Gaza have tried to do, they haven't managed to get the arms and get Hamas to agree to hand over their arms. And we understand that there are still significant arms, weapons, ammunition held in tunnels around Gaza, and Hamas are refusing to give that up. And yet, yesterday, all of a sudden, we hear that Hamas has decided that the official who is in charge of their current organization, an emergency committee that has been set up to rule over Gaza, the head of the emergency committee, resigned. And that's supposedly the first step to dissolve this committee for the monitoring and the government of Gaza, and effectively to hand over to the Board of Peace and to the National Committee for Administration of Gaza. The problem is that the steps that were due to have been fulfilled prior to them taking over Gaza have not, and most significantly this issue of the handing over of Hamas weapons. So I think that what Hamas is trying to do is really two or three things all at once. First of all, to try and send a message to the international world that they are not the ones that are stopping the handover of the control of the Gaza Strip to the National Committee for the Administration of Gaza and the Board of Peace, which is what the ceasefire agreement envisaged. They're not the ones stopping that, because here and there officials have resigned with the full intention of handing over to the National Committee. The problem is that, of course, they are still controlling the narrative with regard to, or controlling the realities on the ground with regard to weapons. And so theoretically, now in the absence of the emergency committee, the National Committee for the Administration of Gaza will be forced to step into the breach and take over, which is what their job is supposed to be. But now they'll have to somehow integrate the existing Hamas infrastructure into their administration of Gaza, including the weapons that are still being held by Hamas. So in fact, what Hamas is trying to do is, by sending a message of, we are not the ones impeding the process and standing in the way of the National Committee taking over, but we are going to be controlling things from within the work that the National Committee does, because our people are involved, our weapons are still out there. We are still going to be very much controlling actions on the ground in Gaza. And ironically, that's been somewhat confirmed by discussions that have been held since yesterday with officials from the Palestinian Authority, with people more associated with Fatah in the Palestinian Authority area. They've all said, don't think that this is Hamas giving up their control. On the contrary, this is Hamas kind of going,
actually establishing it in a way.
Exactly, sort of, you know, a passive-aggressive style of maintaining control within Gaza from within the established structure that President Trump has determined will govern over Gaza. So I think we need to be extremely cautious about what happens from here. But it's a very fascinating move, and I think quite strategically planned and seemingly quite well executed and timed.
Where do they get the strategy? I mean, are they just really good at this? Are they being advised, do we think? But it's really interesting and quite remarkable that a terror organization like this, that has endured the last 3 years following their brutal attack on Israel, that they are still so agile and politically astute.
I think that the people at the helm are smart. I don't think that we should underestimate any of them, even though, you know, they are terrorists. And
Yeah. I don't mean any of this in a positive way, because smart for evil.
Yeah, I think they're smart in what they do. I think that they do plan strategically. I have little doubt that the Qataris are also advising them behind the scenes again, because let's not forget that the senior leadership of Hamas are not in the Gaza Strip right now. They're still in Qatar. And I have little doubt that there is a lot of input coming from Qatar, from the Hamas leadership who are in Qatar, and potentially people who are slightly outside of the Hamas inner circle, but who might well be sympathizers and might be advising Hamas as to what they should be doing next in order to maintain their control and to maintain the threat against Israel, because really that's what Hamas is all about. Let's not forget that Hamas's main idea and ideal and objective is to destroy Israel, not to make life easier for their people, not to create a Palestinian nation. That is not what Hamas was set up to do. They're not a political organization that is there in order to try and progress and benefit their people and to try and build a good future and to build a Palestinian nation and to build a country that will be, you know, a light unto the nations. That is really not what the Hamas organization was all about. It is clearly an organization that was set up with the intention and with the objective of destroying Israel. And they are not going to stop doing that. And they will use every tactic and every legitimate cause. They will paint everything that they do with a certain veneer of legitimacy in order to attract the sympathy and the attention, particularly of the left-leaning world, who will say, oh, we feel so sorry for them because they're trying to build a Palestinian nation. They really are not. And that is just a veneer that they're using for their main objective of trying to destroy Israel. And they're getting very good advice, and they're being very well advised and financed and helped from various quarters outside of the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, and it's just so we continue to watch that. And we don't have a lot of time, but the Knesset has begun to advance a politically appointed probe into October the 7th. So how is this, how is it proposed that this is going to work?
Well, I mean, obviously this is part of the ongoing major dispute within Israeli society about how we go about investigating the massacre that took place on October the 7th, the lead up, the failures, how we go into to examining, investigating all of that in order to learn lessons, to make sure it doesn't happen again, and potentially to lay blame to people who didn't do their job when they were supposed to have done it. And a National Commission of Inquiry is the obvious thing that should be used to examine this. That National Commission of Inquiry would effectively come under the auspices of the High Court of Justice, which the government is is completely opposed to. And so the Knesset is now being asked to set up what would be an alternative commission of inquiry, a national state commission of inquiry, which is highly politicized because the members of the commission are appointed by the Knesset and not by any independent organization, not only by the Knesset, but by a majority of 80 Knesset members, which means that the governing coalition will have control over who are appointed to this commission of inquiry. And therein lies all the controversy, because it is believed that this should be done independently, that politicians shouldn't be involved, because politicians may well be implicated in some of the findings of such a commission. Therefore, it should be done independently. But the Knesset seems to be, this government seems to be absolutely hell-bent on appointing this commission before the Knesset dissolves ahead of our elections coming up later this year, to make sure that when the new government takes office, that they already have this commission in place, that it's not something that the new government will handle, that if anything, they will have to move to dissolve it if they don't believe that that's the way that things should be handled. So there's a lot of urgency now to set this up and to make sure that the law goes through, that the commission is set up, and then the new government finds that as a fait accompli when they take office, whenever that will be later this year. So we will be watching carefully to see where that goes. But clearly, a point of controversy and lack of agreement across Israel as to how this is being done.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8:01. We can catch Anthony for the Israel Report, or with the Israel Report, tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.